Welcome to episode 152 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live from Microsoft Ignite 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, Ben and Scott interview Stephen Murawski about managing your infrastructure as code using tools like Azure Repos and Azure Pipelines inside of Azure DevOps. We also have a special giveaway from Microsoft, so be sure to listen for the details in this episode.
I'm excited for our conversation today. We are going to sit down and talk about something a little bit different that we haven't talked about in the past. We talk about Office 365 and Azure, but it'd be nice to bring them together a little bit and maybe get some tooling that sits in the middle and can help us drive forward with maybe better deployments or better ways to manage scripts or code within our environment, or even templates and infrastructure as code.
Exactly. And where are we recording this from? I hear some background noise there, Scott. Where are you?
In a booth at Ignite.
We're in a fishbowl. We're in a fishbowl. It feels like a fishbowl.
Yeah. If only we did it on video, but that's...
Well, you keep telling me you have a face for radio. They finally listened to your feedback that your face is for radio and did not let you do a live show with video.
Excellent. It's what I've always wanted.
Yeah. So with this tooling, we're also not alone in our fishbowl.
We're not. We'd love to have different voices come on. So we have Stephen Murawski with us today, and he is a cloud advocate at Microsoft. But I'll let you go ahead and introduce yourself, Stephen, and then we'll go ahead and get into our conversation.
Great. And thanks for having me, Scott, Ben. I really appreciate the opportunity here. So yeah, I'm a cloud advocate at Microsoft, and I focus primarily on DevOps, the ops side of DevOps, modern operational concepts, things like site reliability engineering and cloud native operations. And I kind of came into this space from the IT pro side of the house. I've been a PowerShell fanatic for years. And prior to coming to Microsoft, I worked at Chef building configuration management tools. I got the bug while I was working in site reliability engineering at Stack Overflow. I got bit by the config management bug, which then led to infrastructure as code, DevOps pipelines, and all these fun tools and technologies for managing our infrastructure in a more stable fashion. Because I'm a control freak. When I run a system, I want to know what's happening. I want to know what's there. I want to be confident in how my systems are going to run. And configuration management tooling, infrastructure as code tooling, gives me a much stronger grasp of that control so that I can go home and not get paged as often.
It's an interesting thing. We talk a lot about moving to more DevOps constructs and really following processes or living our lives in generally a better way. And then we try and combine that with things like servers as cattle, mm-hmm. or really treating servers as disposable objects. Do I care about the server, or do I care about the workload that runs on top of it? Was it the application or the website that it was running or the batch process? Or was it that the server was there? Do I really care if the server goes away if I can just instantiate the process and do it again? So then we get into PowerShell and some of the things that you've loved with imperative tooling and being maybe a little bit more deliberate in the way we deploy and thinking about step one, step two, step three. And then we start to step back and maybe get into templates and tooling and some of that automation that comes with Chef or Puppet or desired state configuration. And then we want to carry that forward into the cloud and say, hey, let's do ARM templates or let's do Terraform. Let's reach out to HashiCorp and see what they have going on and get into those more idempotent deployments and living that way. But now we have a problem. Mm-hmm. Most of us know how to potentially manage our scripts, hopefully, on our desktops, at least. You know, we were having a conversation when we were sitting over at lunch, and there were some gentlemen next to us, and they were Exchange admins, and one of them was so happy that he had found out about Notepad++ and that it had multiple tabs, and he could open all his scripts at once. But I think every single one of those scripts lived on his desktop.
Yes, well, I'm sure. And I'm pretty sure he was also, like, copying and pasting out of Notepad into his PowerShell terminal.
He might have been doing that.
Run these scripts. That's the impression I got.
And that's okay in a certain context. It becomes less okay when that starts targeting our production environments, right? And I love that we started the conversation here around, like, hey, where am I managing my scripts? Are they sitting on my desktop? How do I share these with my coworkers, right? That becomes the next problem. Hey, that script you ran, where is that? Oh, it's over on that file share. It's the one .old, not the one .back. It's the one
that is v1.2.3.text .ps1.zip.txt, yeah, so I could email it to you.
Right.
Just change the extension. It'll be fine.
Well, you forgot the date and the time with the underscores.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So very often when I talk to folks, one of the first things I talk about, anybody who's doing any automation of any sort and managing any production artifacts of any sort, which includes things like config files, right, is we need to have a conversation about source control. It's something we can do for free. There's open source alternatives. There's a ton of free offerings. This is not a we don't have money to go do problem. This is a we need to start looking at a different pattern of how we manage and maintain these things. And source control, it's not necessarily that it's a new way of storing our stuff. It's more of a communication tool. Because it's versionable, right, we know what the current version is. We know what changes have happened to these things. And everybody in the team can understand and look to one place for where the source of truth is. And very often when folks want to start adding a little more consistency to how things behave in their environments, one of the first things I talk about is, hey, let's gather up all the scripts that we use and just dump them into source control. Don't worry about structure. Don't worry about changing things or cleaning them up, or don't worry about adding tests or linting or any of these words that sound scary or different or anything else. Let's add one topic. Let's get it into source control. And this is a discovery process.
As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro.
I come from the IT background. I feel like there's still a lot of that old mentality of source control is for your developers, not for your IT admins. And it's something that IT admins need to stop being scared of, is the word source control and using that for some of these, their scripts, their configuration, PowerShell, all of that type of stuff.
Yep, that actually makes me so, so angry when I hear that, because here's the deal, right? Developers put their source code in source control because the source code is valuable to the company because it helps deliver business value. If the scripts I'm writing that manage the production environments that that source code runs in are broken, bad, do malicious things, even unintentionally, right? That is as valuable, if not more valuable, than the source code that, because that source code can't run if my scripts don't get the environment into the state that it needs to be. So we need to treat it with as much respect as we treat that application source code. In the IT space, we do this very often to ourselves. We have this concept of throwaway scripts. I'll just whip up a little throwaway script on this. No, because we are devaluing the work that we do. The scripts that we write, it's important. It matters, right? If we don't treat it with the respect that it deserves, we're not going to, number one, we're not going to be compensated for it, right? Other people aren't going to value our work, but also we stand the risk of losing out on all of the potential benefits of a more stable and more consistent experience that our development friends have found through learning processes like continuous integration and continuous delivery, and using those processes as places to inject quality. We lose out on all that opportunity if we don't value the work that we do and start to treat it like it is valuable work product.
Right. And this becomes even more important then as we move into the whole idea of infrastructure as code. When we start getting into Azure and running servers, hardware in Azure, and we have even more stuff like the ARM templates, the whole DevOps, all of that type of stuff.
We have to be mindful in that we often talk about scripts. And really, when we say scripts, I think we're talking about more than just PowerShell scripts or batch scripts or bash scripts, whatever they happen to be. We're talking about configuration files. We're talking about templates. We are talking about that zip file that contains the executable that might have your application in it that really helps it deploy, right? I might need like a copy of like 7-Zip Portable to go ahead and pull down and make sure that I can unzip things in a nice immutable manner every time. So there's this supporting infrastructure where we need to put things together and just be more holistic in the way we approach them. So now we don't name things V1, V2. V1 and V2 is just a piece of metadata for us. Let's be able to step back in time. Very important to be able to do that, like roll back, roll forward, absolutely. But also thinking about the body of things that come along with me. Like if I'm writing an ARM template and my ARM template calls a custom script extension, you know, I want to run that PowerShell script or that DSC extension, whatever it is, I probably want the DSC and the ARM template to live in the same place, same hierarchy, whether it's a single repo or some part of a hierarchy within a repo as it sits out there today. And then that says, okay, well, let's think about tooling that's out there that's available to us to let us do this. One of the mistakes I see individuals make is, you know, we go and train someone or we upskill on ARM templates and they end up in the Azure portal and they're creating their templates in the portal and there's a button that says save my template. And then they end up with this Azure resource that's a template gallery, which isn't really source control. It's like something light. I don't know what it is. It's not source control light. But there's other tools out there, like Steven mentioned. Like maybe we look at something like GitHub or we look at Azure DevOps or it really doesn't matter. There's lots and lots of choices out there for us. I think there's advantages by saying if we're in the Microsoft ecosystem, like maybe we're not multi-cloud and that's all we do is Azure, there's arguments to be made to say maybe we want to stay in that ecosystem and take advantage of some of the niceties that exist there.
Regardless of where you want to build and deploy to, or regardless of where you have to run your infrastructure, if you're running on-premise, if you're running in other clouds, Azure DevOps has Azure in front of it, but it can go and do things against it. I mean, there's plugins to make it work with other clouds. That's all fine and dandy. But a great place to start, because there's a really nice free tier, right, is with Azure repos. You fire up a Git repository, you can collaborate with 5 of your closest friends, and just do that discovery process. Collect all the things, put them in there, and then make changes and get used to that, get used to that tooling. You're probably going to spend a couple months getting used to, I check something in, and you probably want to wire up a small little process with Azure pipelines or some other build tooling, right, to take the things from source control and just stage them out to a management server or stage them out and do nothing else other than a copy files, right? And we do a little file sync, maybe a little robocopy action, whatever, right? And we want to, you know, not do anything scary or fancy. We just want a task that when source control changes, when a new thing gets added or taken away, we're going to update our management point. And that helps us get so that we can focus on getting into the pattern of using source control for our scripts, our config files, our ARM templates, right? So we get them out where they need to be. When we're comfortable with that, then we can start looking at what else we can do with these tools, right? We've built a little comfort in, okay, I edit. I'm either going to use the tools in like VS Code to manage my Git repository, or I've got something like Gitkraken, which is another tool that's out there. Or if you're like me and a command line junkie, I drop down to the command line and I git add and git commit and git push and everything's fine. But once we've got that habit built up and we've built a little bit of comfort, you know, no one's saying do all this stuff tomorrow. Just doing that is going to put you in such a better place because you're going to know the things that you're executing in your environment. And you're going to have a pattern built up to put that stuff there. Now you have a place to start staging things where, hey, we want to add a little quality check. Maybe we're going to validate the PowerShell script syntax. If we're starting to look at ARM templates, right? We want to have an Azure Resource Manager template that defines an environment. We can make sure it's valid JSON. That's a really first easy step.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't get to the point of, hey, I'm trying to do this thing and it's not working. And now I'm making little tweaks and little tweaks and little tweaks. And all of a sudden,
I missed my comma or the squarely bracket was a square bracket and ooh, it all blew up.
Right. And so we can check those things before they become a problem for us. So then we can start. Okay, I'm going to give you the dirty little secret. There's no magic in build servers.
It seems like it's a secret and people are surprised when we talk about this. It should not be a surprise.
No, these are orchestration engines. They're task runners that know how to talk to source control. They know how to watch for certain hooks, for certain types of behaviors, right? There's no real magic here other than, hey, something changed. Okay, you go do something now. And it points to one of the servers in a pool that it manages that can go and okay, I'm going to call over the latest version of that repository, and now I can run PowerShell, or I can run Python, or I can run Perl, or I can run, you know, if you like, you know, cartoon characters swearing, you can run Perl. And there's a number of different capabilities that these machines tend to have, and they can leverage all of the things that we have in our environments. If I need to talk to Azure, or I need to talk to AWS, or I need to talk to GCP, there are tools and tasks that are there to help you wire up and connect to those things. If you're in the Azure space, that's where I'm most familiar. Maybe I need to talk to a certain subset of Azure resources to manage my staging environment or a production environment. I can create a service principle, which I can apply the right constraints to so that it can only talk to the things that really matter for it. And I can wire that up inside Azure DevOps so that when I want to run an Azure PowerShell script or when I want to deploy an ARM template or anything else, it can operate in the context of that service principle. And we don't have to worry about passing additional creds in or anything else. It's all orchestrated in a nice, secure fashion for us. And it can execute my template right after I validated that, hey, it's valid JSON. Or maybe I'm going to run it in a validate-only state to make sure that they're valid changes that can go against Azure. I can start to take a few steps to ensure that the likelihood of success for me is going to go up when it's time to execute these things.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. We did record this live at Microsoft Ignite, and as a benefit, Microsoft is giving away Microsoft Surface earbuds to listeners. So this is a sweepstakes. To enter it, you just have to go to https://podcastsweepstakes, and it is not case sensitive. Just make sure you go do this before December 15 of 2019, and you'll get entered in to win those Surface earbuds.
It's not just that the likelihood of success goes up, it's that you're successful every time because you're building these repeatable processes that you know to be repeatable, which is like the beauty of some of this. And I think just to take a step back, so when we talk about the automation side of it and kind of bringing some of that in, really we're transitioning out of saying, hey, let's start to consume that code that was stored in that repository and let's run it and let's do some things to it, either make changes to it, run it, maybe we have somebody do a review of it, whatever it happens to be. That's happening inside of another part of Azure DevOps called pipelines, but You mentioned five users, you know, let's get five friends. That's all free. And then you get something like 1,800 build minutes a month on multiple agents, whether it's an Ubuntu server, you want to be on like 1604 LTS, or you want the Windows server with the latest and greatest tooling already installed on it. So It's bootstrapped, it's ready to go. So that script or that template that we were able to deploy and we knew how to do that from our desktop, that's great. We figured it out. Now we can take that and say, hey, instead of me doing it on my desktop, let's let the task runner over here go ahead and spin it up for me and run it through and do what it needs to do.
Yep. Maybe you don't want to give it that much power. And that's okay. Because we could use tools like Azure DevOps Pipelines, right? Azure Pipelines provide a number of different tasks. And one of them might be like deploy an Azure resource group. And we can specify a template. We can give it some parameters. And we give it that connection. But we can tell it to run in validate-only mode. And so that's going to submit the template. And it's going to evaluate all the functions in that template. Because that's the thing we can't check as easily locally, right? And it's going to see, given the resource group I was told to deploy to, is this a valid deployment? It's not going to catch every single error because some of these errors only occur at runtime, but it's going to catch the thing like, hey, in your template, you told me this is a Linux VM. Running right now, it's a Windows VM. I can't make that switch, right? And so we're going to catch some of these problems before they become something that we have to go do something with, even if we're not comfortable yet with letting our automation run the deployment. And that can help us get to that place of, well, hey, I can run these validations. If the validations come back fine, all of the time that I've run the deployment after I've run these validations, it's worked out well. Maybe now we can start automating that step of it, and I don't have to manually intervene here. And now I can go do something else that matters important for my organization. Right?
I think that's the thing, something else important that matters. It wasn't that what you weren't doing wasn't important. There's probably other important things that you could be doing or taking a look at. Going and automating the next process, because there's always going to be another one.
Right. Sometimes folks get scared like, hey, if this starts doing what I've been doing, what am I going to go do? I have never been in an environment where there has been a lack of things to go do. Sometimes they're going to be different. Sometimes there's going to be some exploration that needs to happen to figure out what that next thing is. But there is so much that we can do in our environments to improve the reliability, the consistency, the capability that we offer to our internal, the internal users of the infrastructure that we manage, taking away some of those rote common behaviors. If we can set up tooling and automation to do those things for us and take away that, that's how we get to find room for the interesting stuff, right? It's not interesting by the 15th time that I'm going in and spinning up a VM or deploying a template or something else. It gets a little boring, right? I want to find the next thing.
Right. Well, and that's like coming again from the IT perspective, like you said, a lot of people are like, well, I'm going to automate myself out of a job, or what am I going to do? And just think, how much more valuable are you going to be to your company if you automate everything? So it's more consistent, it's more dependable, it's more reliable. And if you're doing the same thing over and over again 15 times, are you really that valuable, or can they go find anybody to do it? You can go spend your time on those interesting things and those new things to try to bring even more value. So it's not that you're going to automate yourself out of a job. You're going to automate yourself into cooler stuff.
Into the next job.
You are going to automate yourself into a job.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of a bug. I don't know. Like, I'm listening to Stephen talk, and clearly you're passionate about it, right? It is a thing that you've been able to make a career out of. It's not like, ooh, we forgot about this, and now I'm just a principal button clicker over here. You are still having a career and kind of maintaining it and carrying it forward. And it's not something to be feared. It's a crazy conversation to still be having in 2019, but it is a hesitation from people.
So one of the challenges I have, so I talk to people about cloud a lot, right? I talk to people about DevOps a lot and things. And like, yeah, we'd love to go do that, but we don't have the breathing room to do that. We're always responding to things. We're always fighting fires, right? There's always so much else to do in the queue. That's the point,
right?
It is reasonable in how we're wired to kind of fear change. That's just the nature of how people tend to be wired. But when we fear kind of that our job's going to go away, but 30 seconds later we're saying, oh yeah, we can't learn something new because I've got so much other stuff to do, I'll never get through it all. There's something that's not lining up here, right? And so those things that can help us build that capacity, and some of that capacity comes from, hey, guess what? I know where all our automation lives. It's an easy first step. Just get it into source control. If you've got a couple of folks on your team, really easy to get started. I started using source control as a sole admin. I was IT admin for a local police department. And just so that I had somewhere where I had this permanent undo button, mm-hmm. It was worthwhile just for me alone to have my own source control. It also then was there for when somebody came and took my job because I got another one. He had everything lined up for, hey, these are all, if you're looking for some automation, it's all in source control, right? And if you want to be open for that next opportunity in your line of work, right? If you can't be spared, if you're so critical, how are you going to move to the next thing?
Yeah.
That is a very good point.
Yeah, you don't want to lock yourself up and put yourself down in that way.
Everyone is always looking to save time in their day, just like moving to the cloud can save you from the mundane tasks of patching, updating, and maintaining servers. Sanebox can save you from the mundane and time-consuming task of managing your email. Sanebox works with your existing email configuration to make your mailbox awesome. It may be using Sane Black Hole to avoid mailing and cold sales emails, or Sane Reminders to automatically remind you when you need to follow up on an email. You can even snooze an email, yeah, just like that pesky alarm clock in the morning, to defer or to de-emphasize an email that doesn't need your immediate attention. So what are you waiting for? There's nothing to install, nothing to learn. Just go to sanebox.com/allthings. That's sanebox.com/allthings to get 2 weeks free and a $25 credit.
Let's maybe cover one or two more things just with some of the kind of power inside of pipelines there.
Yeah, you bet.
And think about some other ways that maybe we can use them. So you mentioned you didn't want to get into linting in the beginning. I think that's like a great simple thing. We do it all the time, not even for code. Mm-hmm. As an example, the company I work for, we generate a lot of documentation and we do all that in Markdown. And we want to make sure that it's consistent across everything. So we all run a Markdown linting extension inside of, happens to be VS Code in my case, right? That runs it through, but that's available for Sublime and Notepad++, all those things. But then we need to drive consistency across this team of content editors who's pushing data in. So we can do that with not just JSON, but anything you want. Yep. If you can run NPM on a your local desktop here. Hey, there's a task, you know, npm install, do this thing.
If you're not familiar with what linting is, it's style checking. It's validating that some common patterns are being filed, and different languages have different tools for this. For PowerShell, we have PS Script Analyzer. For Ruby, there's RuboCop. For Python, there's PyLint. There's a number of different tools out there. I don't know of anything for batch files. So I think the linting tool for that is go write yourself some PowerShell.
I was going to say, if you're using batch, go learn PowerShell. Speaking of the being afraid of change, it was at a conference, and there was somebody that still wrote batch scripts and like refused to go write PowerShell. So if you're listening, yes, I agree.
Yeah. So linting is a great first step, and our pipeline, it becomes a great place to enforce a common check for that, right? We can run PS Script Analyzer, or we can run some of those linting tools locally. We can run that Markdown lint in our editors. The PowerShell extension in VS Code does that for you as well. Gives you little squigglies where things are wrong. But there's no guarantee that people followed up on those things before they've committed that to source control. And so as we build norms across our team, because now we're all sharing things, we got them in source control, so everybody has a chance to see everything, we can come together kind of on some accepted patterns and practices. And a lint step is a great way to check that. So we can check syntax. Then we check our lint. Then if we start getting a little bit more ambitious, maybe we start writing some tests around our tooling. Because guess what? We all test our scripts, and we all test our automation. Sometimes we're testing it directly against the systems we're trying to manage, and we're validating it by a lot of manual work.
You mean production is the new test?
It is. Well, actually, it's the old test. Production is the old test now.
Right. If your production environment's your only environment, you really just have a test environment.
Right. I was actually talking to somebody at the PowerShell booth earlier today here, and it's like, yeah, you know, I normally edit in VS Code, but then I use the ISE when I'm editing something on a quick server when I have to make a quick change. Like, okay, except let's talk about a little different pattern here. Let's do the editing where the editing should happen, and let's get it into source control. Because now that script diverged from any other variant you have somewhere else. And would you let the developers in your environment go and edit source files or DLLs out on one server and just leave? There's no audit log or anything else to know what's different there. We would have a conniption fit. Right. I mean, when I came up, it was really common practice. Oh, yeah, just swap this DLL out or, so you know, let's edit some HTML on the file. Right. We do that too much on the IT side of things, and we've given ourselves a pass. And by moving our stuff into source control, by putting a very lightweight process in front of it, it gives us a chance to mature at our own rate as our team is ready for it. And we have a single place to define what the common policy is so that things will behave the same regardless of whether you run them, Ben, whether you run them, Scott, or whether I run them, or whether somebody brand new to the team comes on and picks it up to run. Not just, it requires some magic setup on my machine to run.
Everyone on your team is unique. So is SkillMeUp.com. Only SkillMeUp provides the bridge from fundamentals to certification paths to advanced skills to accelerate digital transformation with one subscription and five ways to learn. Start your free pilot today and supercharge your IT and Microsoft Azure skills by visiting skillmeup.com/pilot or click the link in the show notes below.
I think one more, just to kind of close it out with a little bit of tips, since we've been talking about PowerShell and CLIs and things like that. One of the things, and you mentioned Pester, and you kind of mentioned it in passing. So we think about a lot about not just, you know, sanitation and things like your documentation, but, or what our script looks like, but, you know, we do unit testing with code. Like, if you work in a development shop, hopefully your developers are doing unit testing. If you don't work in a development shop, or you do, but your job is to write PowerShell, you should think about unit testing PowerShell as well. And running things like Pester, like a unit testing framework for PowerShell, totally possible in Azure DevOps as well. It's just a little marketplace extension, and you can effectively be the best kind of IT bro. You can next your way through that thing. And
So I'll give you even another dirty little secret. You don't have to know any magic or go searching for a lot of extensions. If you can write it in a PowerShell script, you can execute it in your pipeline. There's a PowerShell script task. You just point to it. Maybe you might want to do a little bit of checking to make sure the modules you expect are going to be there. And you could do installs off the PowerShell gallery. You know, just do a little, you know, find module, install module magic. And inside your script to check to make sure the pester's there, and then you go execute it, right? Or you can find a task to wrap that for you if you'd like. But if we can do it on the command line, you can do it in your pipeline. As long as it's not prompting for something interactive.
Yeah.
Right. But for the most part, yeah. And unit testing, hugely impactful, especially because we're writing software, as I said, too. And we are writing software when we write scripts or we build ARM templates, things like that. That is software, and we should be testing it, because if we're not, we're testing it manually against the environments we're running it against. And we're going to test, but if I have an automated test that can go do it, versus me manually having to check the environment every single time or waiting for my customers to check the environment every single time, you're going to get a lot more value for the effort that you put into the test versus the time you're going to spend if you haven't written the test.
Yeah, you don't want your customers to be your testers. Never a good place to be.
They don't like it when you break stuff when you test in their environments.
Well, sometimes they do, but not most of the time.
Yeah, again, a lot of this is conditional to your environment, right? Some environments may be more tolerant of a little bit more loosey-goosey behavior in production. Other environments, if you're writing, you know, software that runs like machines in a hospital, probably not going to be very tolerant of errors at runtime, right? Or accidental deployment changes that wipe out databases or things like that. That's not going to be happy days.
Awesome. Well, we thank you very much for the time today. Where can people find you? Should they go to LinkedIn? You got a blog, Twitter?
Yep, LinkedIn. It's the Use PowerShell on LinkedIn is my
You do have a great username there.
Yep, and then Twitter, I am at Stephen Morawski, which is very difficult to spell. So
we'll put it in the show
notes.
We'll put
the notes. Just go look at the notes and click the link in the notes.
Those are probably the best places to find me. Otherwise, I'm also out at a good number of Microsoft and Microsoft-related events. PowerShell Summit is a great place to find me, too.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for the time today. We really do appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, likewise. Thanks a lot, Stephen.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.